Jody Cahill, welcome to a Tuesday morning, short week, but Representative Mike Kaufman joins me this morning. You know, Congressman, you are, I'm assuming you're in the home district this week.
I am in the, I'm in my office right now, in the district office in Aurora.
What kind of plans are you, what kind of thing, I know that you guys, you know, everybody has this impression Congress never works, but I also know too many members of Congress who never stop during these breaks. What do you have planned over this holiday period?
Well, with the exception of Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, and Sundays, it's a full schedule.
Yeah.
And so it's that way every time I'm home. I have a staff here in the district that does constituent stuff. So it's really an opportunity to meet with constituents, to meet with small business owners, to meet with people affected by the policies out of Washington, D.C., and see what we can do to make their lives better.
Well, good luck with that, because
yeah.
You know, really, I wanted to talk to you today about the deal that has been struck by Secretary of State John Kerry, as well as other nations in around the world, all of the five permanent members of the Security Council that have struck a deal with Iran that will give the, and I think this is the best way to sort of encapsulate it. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. They have 6 months to kind of get their act together and prove their intent. And in the meantime, we're going to relieve about $8 billion worth of sanctions on Iran.
Well, it's certainly the easing up of sanctions. That's one part of it. In exchange for a 5-6 month period, where we can negotiate with the Iranians a longer term deal, what they will do in exchange for that is to suspend, not terminate, but suspend the further development of their nuclear weapons program. And so let me tell you who wasn't at the table, and that's important to note, and that's our closest ally in the region, Israel, and our closest Arab ally in the region, Saudi Arabia, who are both opposed to this agreement. And so what it does, in effect, is it really throws a lifeline, an economic lifeline to the Iranian regime. The country has suffered under these economic sanctions. They've been working. And what we need to do is toughen sanctions, not weaken sanctions. And what we need to do is really put the Iranian regime in a position where their choice is either the stability of the country, keeping it from the economy collapsing, or certainly yielding, their right to enrich uranium and to produce these weapons.
So are you looking for a complete shutdown of their nuclear program? What in a perfect world would you like to say?
Termination.
Yeah.
Certainly they have the right to produce energy for peaceful purposes. But we know, and I think the international community certainly is aware, that they are engaged in a program to produce nuclear weapons through enriching uranium. And so that's the concern, that has to be terminated.
I don't trust the Iranians, okay? I don't trust them. They've done nothing to deserve any kind of trust at all. But let me play devil's advocate for a second. What about the assertion that we're going to send inspectors in, the UN is going to send inspectors in, and everything's going to be looked at so carefully, and everything's going to be open and completely available to these inspectors at any time? Is there any chance that you believe that that will be done, for lack of a better term, on the up and up?
Yeah, I wouldn't have confidence in that. But more importantly, what this agreement does is it gives the Tehran regime breathing space by virtue of relaxing the sanctions, not for terminating their new, and I'm all for ending the sanctions if there's an agreement to terminate their program, and if in fact we can have a robust inspection plan. But I think that this really goes to the advantage of Iran, because they get important breathing space, because the stability of this country, their country, is threatened right now due to these sanctions.
Right.
And so they get the opportunity to stabilize their country's economy in exchange for not ending their nuclear weapons program, but merely delaying it for 6 months. And so if there isn't an agreement on that 6 months, then we've really put them at a much better position.
Let's talk about Israel for a second, because you mentioned the fact that there were several significant players in the Middle East, Israel, Saudi Arabia, that were not involved in this. And wouldn't it be weird if all of a sudden we had some sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of happenings between Israel and Saudi Arabia and other nations that are concerned about a nuclear Iran?
Well, Israel and Saudi Arabia have equal concerns about Iran developing a nuclear weapon. Stability of the Persian Gulf in terms of Saudi Arabia, stability of the entire region in terms of Israel. There is no question in my view that you should never go forward with an agreement without our partners in the region being signatories to the agreement. And so if Netanyahu said tomorrow that I think this is a good deal, boy, I really take a close look at it. But Netanyahu is not saying that, the Prime Minister of Israel. He's saying that this is an historic mistake. Those are very strong words. And so last time I think that the President said something where Netanyahu openly opposed him was he said that Israel ought to return to the 68 borders. Well,
right.
I think those are untenable in terms of defending. And Netanyahu spoke up and said, you know, that ain't going to happen. And the president backed down. But this time the president's not backing down. And what the president, obviously I think he should go back through Congress to these sanctions are in statute, but I know what this president will do. And is really, I think, abusive interpretation of the Constitution is to use, quote unquote, his prosecutorial discretion in terms of the executive and their requirement to enforce laws and not enforce certain laws like certain elements of the sanctions that have been imposed, you know, as part of that agreement. I certainly think that's wrong, and I think as a separate issue worthy of discussion. That I think this country is in a constitutional crisis because of this president's ability or abuse of waving the so-called magic wand of this prosecutorial discretion and basically creating law by not enforcing existing law, creating new law by not enforcing existing law without going through Congress, a co-equal branch of government.
I want to ask you about that, and we're going to come back to Iran, but I want to follow this line of thinking because one of my great frustrations with the Republicans right now in D.C. is that there doesn't seem to be a concerted effort to push back against these exact constitutional abuses that you're talking about. Is this something that comes up in the caucus about what if there is any strategy? There has to be some way to tell the president of the United States that he cannot just on a whim choose to enforce or not enforce pieces of legislation that have been created by the Congress.
My office is engaged in the legal research right now.
Okay.
Of how do we take on the administration? It appears right now that we may have to do it, that I may have to do it, or somebody may have to do it as an individual outside of the Congress to litigate on one of these issues. The constitutionality, and I think that you can litigate on one of them and establish a precedent that impacts all of them. I mean, this president has overturned the 1996 welfare reform by simply saying that through an executive order that some of the requirements that states were supposed to do or are supposed to do under the Welfare Reform Act, the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, passed by the Congress, signed by President Clinton, were discretionary to the state governors or to the states, which is not true. That's not in the statute doesn't provide for discretion. There are work requirements that are associated with welfare reform that weren't discretionary. And yet this president did that through executive order. He's done a lot, you know, the Obamacare, which you've been discussing, you had a great discussion so far this morning on Obamacare. He has taken key parts of Obamacare and merely deferred them for political reasons after this election. The employer mandate, a number of other issues in Obamacare, where I certainly don't see where he has the discretion to do that in the law, and without going back through Congress to amend the law. So, I mean, I just, it's gotten out, totally out of control. And if it is allowed to continue, it will really erode the founding principles of this country constitutionally in terms of the Congress of the United States and the executive branch being co-equal branches of government.
Well, and the part about this, you know, and I'll reference the filibuster action that was taken by the Democrats last week to change the rules of filibuster. You know, that's fantastic, and we can all stand around and be outraged, but it seems like people are forgetting they won't always be in charge. And I really wish that Democrats would be able to put this shoe on the other foot and say, what if this was a Republican president who you disagreed with every facet of what he or she was doing? You know, you certainly would stand up and fight against this kind of constitutional power grab that is happening right now, or unconstitutional power grab. And it's amazing to me how that gets lost in the political back and forth, that eventually, at some point, your guy's not going to be in charge anymore.
Well, I think it's stunning to, I mean, the United States Senate, you know, designed by our founding fathers of the Constitution, was set up to be the more deliberative body that it would, in fact, given that cloture rule was to require bipartisanship, that not one party simply have a monopoly of power. And I think that, and when people complain, particularly the president, and you often hear, I think, more liberal commentators complain about the gridlock in Washington, D.C., or the inability for bipartisanship to occur, and they try to blame Republicans. Well, my gosh, look at this. This negates the requirement for bipartisanship by doing away with that 60-vote requirement to bring those nominations by the executive branch to the floor of the Senate. So, you know, it's certainly disappointing.
It is disappointing. Congressman, could you hang on through a real quick break? I would like to continue. I've got a couple more questions about Iran, specifically how long this deal has been in the works, because I've seen some news media reports that this has been kind of in the works for a very long time, as well as I'd like to get your insight. I'm told over and over again by the media that Rouhani is a moderate, and I'd love to know if you have any insight on whether or not what that means, how moderate is moderate when you're talking about an Iranian president.
Sure.
Do you have time to hang around? We'll be right back with Congressman Mike Kaufman right after this, but first let's check in with Pat Woodard and find out what's happening on the roadways. Talk Radio 630 KHAL, we're checking back in with Congressman Mike Kaufman from the 6th District. You know, that's kind of hard to say, Congressman. That's the 6th District. Is not easy. You have come out, you came out with a pretty strong statement against the deal that the Obama administration has cut with the Iranian government. So just to encapsulate, you are in favor of ratcheting up the sanctions in order to ensure, basically to bring Iran to its knees so they have no choice but to agree to give up their nuclear program for weapons, right?
Sure. And the House actually passed a bill that does tighten sanctions, and it's pending in the Senate. And Harry Reid was set to bring it up, and I think that the president has had a number of conversations, I think, with the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and my concern is that Harry Reid will back down and use his power as the Senate Majority Leader not to bring the Senate version of the House bill up.
And that bill is H.R. 850, and it passed with bipartisan support overwhelmingly.
It really did.
It was 400-20. So this is not a Republican grandstanding bill. This is a bill that members of both parties felt strongly enough to vote for. So that's significant. I'd like to ask you how long has this deal been in the works? Because that's, to me, it just feels like this all happened so suddenly over the weekend. Obviously, it didn't happen suddenly over the weekend, but what is the word on the street about how this whole thing unfolded?
I can't remember when it started, but it has been reported in the media. But the negotiations begin even prior to this president, the new president of Iran, coming into office. And so actually under Ahmadinejad, the old president, who was very outspoken against Israel, much more so than the current one, that negotiations begin at that time without the knowledge of Israel, without the knowledge of Saudi Arabia. And that in itself is stunning.
I'd like to ask you if you can give me some insight. The media loves to tell me how the new president, Rouhani, is a reformer. He's a moderate. Now, my idea of what a moderate might be different than what he actually is. Do you have any insight on where he is on the scale? Is he truly a reformer? Is he another sort of puppet for Khomeini that is out there doing whatever Khomeini tells him to do? What is the deal with Rouhani?
I think we have to remember that the position of the president in Iran is subordinate to the supreme leader, and the supreme leader is always a religious leader, and so it's essentially a theocracy. And so it's you have to go through the vetting process to be essentially to be on the ballot. And so it's really in relative terms, and we have to. So I think that it's good that the Iranian people, among the choices that they were given,
right,
by the religious leaders of the country, chose a more moderate voice. But I think that certainly is again due to the success of the economic sanctions. And so the question is do we continue on this track? Or do we abandon the track at this time? And I think it would be wrong to do so.
Here's the thing that concerns me, and there's two parts to this. One, we were told after the Arab Spring by the same media that's now declaring Rouhani a moderate that the Muslim Brotherhood was a moderate organization. Now, anyone who had looked at history knew that that was factually inaccurate, but now we're being told the same thing with Rouhani. My concern is this. What happens when the next guy gets elected? You know, I mean, this is the beginning of a long process, and I don't have a lot of faith that there's not going to be another Mahmoud Ahmadinejad on the table at some point if the Iranians manage to sort of right the ship, as you're suggesting that they have the ability to at least stabilize the economy with the relief that this sanction rollback that is happening now will provide. There's no indication that the leadership of Iran has had a change of heart other than they're being crushed economically. So it's an economic decision only. There's certainly no change in ideology. How is that not a huge concern?
You know, it is a concern. And certainly, I certainly support negotiations. I don't think there's any question about that. But I don't support the conditions of negotiations that we relax the economic sanctions on them. I think that they, and if anything is a condition of negotiations, they ought to suspend the forward development of their nuclear weapons program. But at any rate, again, the ultimate condition has to be the termination of the cessation of their enrichment program of uranium. That obviously can weaponize that, for purposes of producing a nuclear weapon. And I think that's got to be the focus or the objective. And in not throwing the regime a lifeline, I think if anybody knows this, and if anybody who is concerned about this is Israel,
right,
who could very well be the target of these nuclear weapons. And I think if Israel says that this is an historic mistake, Netanyahu, I think we really ought to listen to that. I mean, I think it's so disingenuous on part of the administration to have gone forward with these agreements, again, without bringing our closest allies in the region along, is such a tremendous mistake. And it speaks so poorly of our country in terms of our commitment to that region. And so I just think it's such a tremendous mistake. And if we are not as impacted, obviously, as Israel is, we are not as impacted as Saudi Arabia is, but I think what they are certainly, I think, I think their opinion ought to matter. And to this administration, it doesn't.
Are you concerned that Israel, and I actually saw a news media report that said Israel and Saudi Arabia are sort of planning on creating their own thing? Both of them are extremely concerned. Saudi Arabia, of course, because of religious tensions that exist between Saudi Arabia and Iraq, or in Iran, and then obviously Israel. Is there some concern in Washington that Israel is going to say, okay, you know what, you guys can do what you want, but we're going to protect ourselves however we see fit?
Well, I think Israel has to take that position at this time. And I think the problem with, there are people, I think, in the administration and perhaps some in Congress that believe there's an inevitability to Iran attaining nuclear weapons, and that we simply ought to accept that fact. I certainly disagree with that, and I think that would lead to a tremendous arms race In the Middle East, and I think if even if Israel, I mean, what Iran may very well do, and is go forward with their nuclear program until about maybe say 90 days or 60 days before they can for weaponization, and so that they can say that they don't have a nuclear weapon, but the reality is that they do. And that certainly the region knows it. And then you're going to see a tremendous arms race in the region among countries that,
right,
that don't necessarily have the kind of stability of other countries that we recognize as nuclear powers. And so I think that's a real concern for the entire stability of the region. And certainly Israel recognizes that, and Saudi Arabia recognizes that, but the Obama administration does not recognize that.
Well, and, you know, I'm not trying to disparage the Muslim faith, but they don't seem to have the same value system that mutually assured destruction would be a deterrent. If you believe you're doing things in the greater glory of God, blowing yourself up in that process doesn't seem to be as big a deal as it did for us and the Soviets.
You know, there are certainly sects. Parts of, sort of jihadist or, radicalized parts of the faith that are really more political ideologies that cloak themselves in the Muslim tradition and that do, in fact, believe in this martyrdom, and we have to be concerned certainly about Tehran in being, you know, a theocracy. Would they, in fact, at the end of the day, would there be elements within that country that would have their, you know, their finger on the trigger?
Right.
And Israel be the target or the United States be the target. And so I think we ought to be, you know, we really need to be much more concerned about this. And we really need to bring our allies on board before we move forward. And I don't think this administration is showing the kind of deliberative concern that they ought to be.
Well, Congressman Mike Kaufman, I appreciate your time this morning and the insight. And obviously, we're going to be watching this. I mean, we're going to see everything unfold over the next 6 months. And hopefully, it works out. You know, I mean, hopefully everyone is operating from a position of honesty and forthrightness, but I'm not buying it until actually happens.
I think the thing to watch next week is Senator Reid and what he does. And does he allow the bill to come to a vote?
Right.
That the president has pressured him not to come to a vote about the sanctions. And then if he does, then there's going to be a lot of tension over that. If he does allow it to come, and it would pass, if it comes, go to the president. The president, my guess, would veto it. And do we have the two-thirds in the House and the Senate to override that veto? But if that doesn't occur, then you will see this president use this, some mechanism that might be questionable to relax these sanctions and go forward with this negotiation, certainly without the consent of Congress.
Yep. Congressman Mike Kaufman, I appreciate your time this morning. I hope we can talk again soon.
We'll do it. Thanks.
Have a great day. We'll be back. When we get back, are you wondering how to talk to your family about how to sign up for Obamacare? Thankfully, there's a guide. We'll go through it next. I'm not making this up. But first, let's check in with Pat Woodard, find out what's happening around the roadway. Talk Radio 630 KHAL. We're making our way through a Tuesday morning. You can call about anything, our conversation with Congressman Mike Kaufman. Feel free, 303-713-8255. You know, I see things on the internet all the time, and I swear to you, sometimes I think they're made up. Like I'm being punked on the internet. And this morning, I saw something that I thought, surely this cannot be real. And then I said, of course it is. And don't call me Shirley, because that's the standard response when anyone uses the word Shirley now. But the fact that this is going on surprises the heck out of me. But more importantly, I really want to know who's going to do this. What am I talking about? Well, Organizing for Action, which is Obama's, whatever it is, I don't know, fundraising arm, political propaganda arm, actually now. I think I'm going to call it the propaganda arm. The Organizing for Action propaganda arm is in full mode. What are they doing? Well, they're concerned. They're very concerned that you are going to go to Thanksgiving dinner and you're going to want to broach the subject of Obamacare and signing people up for healthcare on the exchanges, and you're not going to know how to do it. You're going to be like, I want to bring it up, but I don't know how. Luckily for you, you can zip right on over to barackobama.com/health-care-holidays/. Let me repeat that to you again. barackobama.com/health-care-holidays/. I just like saying that website like that. And then when you get there, it has this nifty, just it's nifty. That's the only word I can use for it. Nifty. Healthcare for the holidays. It has a helpful video of people sitting around the table with their little tiny pieces of turkey. And of course, they have a sensible amount of food on their plate. Okay, this is why I know this is completely fabricated. Because if you look at the plates of these people in the video, they have like a tiny portion of meat, a tiny portion of green beans, a tiny portion of something white, I'm assuming is mashed potatoes, and like half of a roll. Whose Thanksgiving plate looks like that? I mean, if your Thanksgiving plate looks like that, let me just say this right now. I feel sorry for you, okay? I pity you that you can't just throw caution to the wind at least one day of the year, Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving should all be about walking in, waddling out. You know what I'm saying? Walk in, waddle. That's what it is. That's your goal. So already I'm finding room for mockery. I did not watch the video because, quite frankly, I thought I might throw up in my mouth. So I didn't watch the video, but listen to this. And of course, you know what voice I'm using. This holiday season, millions of Americans have a chance to get quality, affordable health insurance, many for the first time. If you have family members who are uninsured, you can play a big part in helping them find coverage that works for them. It might always seem like it, but your family listens to you. So have the talk. Now, you scroll down from there, and I swear to God I'm not making this up, because as I say this, you're going to think to yourself, Mandy is just making this up. No, it starts with send a packing list. Send a packing list. Are your family members traveling home for the holidays? There are a few things they'll need to sign up for healthcare coverage. Make sure they bring the following items with them before they head home. Number one, your social security number. Number two, information about your employer and income, maybe a pay stub or a copy of your most recent W-2. Number three, if you currently have health insurance, you'll need your health insurance card or paperwork that includes a health policy number. That's your packing list. I would make up something. I don't think I could make up anything more ridiculous than this. Number two, planning your healthcare talk. Make sure you have a plan for when, where, and how you'll talk to your family about health insurance. Here are a few tips to help you prepare. Pick a time. Start early. Don't wait until the last minute. Be sure to start the conversation early. Integrate the talk into family time. Take advantage of downtime after meals or between holiday activities to start your talk. Choose a place. Be creative. Think about what matters to your family member. Make it memorable. Find a quiet place to shop. You can start your conversation anywhere, but to shop for health coverage, you will want a more quiet, private place to make a phone call or use the internet. Make it personal. Be honest about your feelings and why this is important to you. Be persistent, but keep it positive. Tell them you care about their health and focus on the benefits that come from knowing you have health insurance. That's not even the worst of it. I'll tell you the next two, conversation tips and number four. Well, you'll just have to wait for number four, but trust me, it's worth it. I'll share it with you after we check on the roadways with Pat Woodard. Doc Radio, 630 K-How. Schneid is a word, Dominic. Get off the Schneid. I don't know where it is. I just learned it somehow from somebody. I think I read it on the internet. That's right. I read it on the internet just as I'm reading. I'm doing a dramatic reading for you this morning as we barrel into Thanksgiving. There is an actual website that you can go to in case you're worried about going to dine with family and friends and not having any way to piss them off or offend them. There's a whole website with information, and it's called barackobama.com/health-care-holidays/. and it's healthcare for the holidays. And it literally is a guide for dummies. And that's the only way I can put it. You know, those big books like the Dummies Guide to Beer Making or whatever it is. This is the Dummies Guide to Pissing Off Your Family by Talking About Healthcare at Thanksgiving. Only they just call it healthcare for the holidays. I already went through send a packing list and plan your talk. But here's where it gets really good. Part three, start the conversation. That's right, start the conversation. They suggest the following. Start by asking, have you thought about signing up for health insurance on the new marketplace? Then offer to walk them through it. Would you like to take some time with me to sign up right now? Then you can ask them to make a plan and commit to it. When do you plan on signing up? Don't forget to follow up. Have you signed up yet? How annoying is this person at Thanksgiving? Do you want to just punch them in the face? I mean, honest to God, if someone shows up with this little four-sheet PowerPoint presentation all printed out, and since I just think that we, first of all, this will never happen in my family, okay? I'm speculating, but this, I will never have to deal with this. But in case you were wondering what to say once you start the conversation, they've offered helpful tips in the what's important to communicate column. Being covered helps you stay healthy and protects you in an emergency. Okay, that's complete crap, the first part of that statement. If you have health insurance and you smoke 5 packs of cigarettes a day and you're 200 pounds overweight and you only eat fast food and junk food, you are not going to be healthy just because you have health insurance. It ain't happening. So to say that it helps you stay healthy, that's crap. It's crap. In and of itself, that is crap. This is why these things don't happen at my dinner table. I'm just saying. Then they continue. You can find a plan that fits your budget. Financial assistance is available for those who qualify. Now, if someone at my dining room table said, you can find a plan that fits your budget and financial assistance is available for those who qualify, you know what I would do? I would stand up, I would pull all the change out of my pocket and throw it at whoever was talking. There's your assistance. It's coming from me, you jackass. But then again, this is why this doesn't come up at my table. You get to choose the plan that's right for you. We get to choose it. Just go choose it. Assuming that the website works. All the health insurance plans on the new marketplace provide free preventive care, including routine checkups, vaccinations, and screenings. Now, if you took that on the face of it, free preventive care, that means that you have constricted or conscripted a doctor into giving you these services. You have conscripted a lab into providing these services for you at no charge. But that's not really what happens. I mean, this is stupid. It's not free. Your insurance company pays for these services, which is why it all costs more. But I continue. You can't be denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions. And lifetime limits are now banned, so your insurance will be there when you need it. For your coverage to start January 1st, you need to sign up by December 23rd. Open enrollment for plans in the marketplace is now through March, but getting started sooner is better. Now, wait a minute. I just want to see if anyone else was confused by those last two talking points. I shall read them quickly so you can review with me. For your coverage to start by January 1st. No, never mind. I read it too quickly. Now it makes sense. It makes sense. And then they include helpful common misconceptions. Misconception, I'm healthy, so I don't need health insurance. Tell them, that may be true, but accidents happen and we all need to be prepared. Health insurance provides you the security of knowing you're covered in an emergency. You mean like when I push you down the stairs for bringing up Obamacare at Thanksgiving? That emergency? Is that what you're talking about? Because I hope you've already got your coverage. Oh, look, it's only Thanksgiving. You're not covered yet. Sucks to be you. And by the way, there's a little button. You can print this. You can print it. You can flipping print this out and walk into your Thanksgiving dinner with this little piece of propaganda from the Obama administration about Obamacare. There's not even words. I really, honest to God, thought this was a joke. I thought this was made up. I saw it and I thought, surely they're kidding about this. Jonah Goldberg had it yesterday in his column. And I thought, really, Jonah, come on. You're being excessive here. And I love Jonah Goldberg. This is crazy. This can't be true. Oh, not just yes. Hell's yes. It is here on the internet. And then let's not forget the fourth step. This is the most important step. On the BarackObama.com/health care-holidays/website. Number four, pledge to have the talk. Make a pledge to have a conversation with your family about health insurance this holiday season. And then you're supposed to put in your email address, and you're supposed to put in your zip code, and you're supposed to click, I will. Now, here's my question. Day after Thanksgiving, am I getting an email from these people saying, how'd it go? What happened? Did your cousin put you in the hospital? Because I would have. I most certainly would have. This is bonkers. I mean, this, first of all, here's my thinking on this. And this really is why I'm baffled by this. Number one, it doesn't surprise me that the administration would put this out. Not at all. They are desperately trying to save Obamacare and the legacy and everything else. They are desperate. Any kind of, I mean, by any means necessary is what they're doing right now. It's like whatever we can do to force people into the system, we're doing. But who in the hell is going to do this? Who's going to print this out and take this to Thanksgiving? And if you do, you are pathetic and you don't understand what the holidays are for. Sure as hell not this. 303-713-8255 is the number. But first, let's check in with Pat Woodard, find out what's happening on the roadways and all around the area right here on Talk Radio 630 KHAL.